Thereafter, from the southern side of the sacrificial fire, known as Anvaharya, came a fearful personality who looked like the destroyer of the entire creation at the end of the millennium. Then this verse doesn't have any purport, so I'll go on to the next few verses until we reach a purport. I suggest that there, around this area of the Bhagavatam, there are many verses without purports. So I'd prefer to chant the verse that we speak on, because often the words are, the particular Sanskrit words are to be commented on. Anyway, the translation of the next verses. If the verse is written on the board, it's going to be spoken on. That's suggestion. So, translation. Like arrows of the next verse, like arrows released in the four directions, the demon's body grew day after day. Tall and blackish, he appeared like a burned hill and was as lustrous as a bright array of clouds in the evening. The hair on the demon's body and his beard and mustache were the color of melted copper, and his eyes were piercing like the midday sun. He appeared unconquerable, as if holding the three worlds on the points of his blazing trident. Dancing and shouting with a loud voice, he made the entire surface of the earth tremble as if from an earthquake. As he yawned again and again, he seemed to be trying to swallow the whole sky with his mouth, which was as deep as a cave. He seemed to be licking up all the stars in the sky with his tongue and eating the entire universe with his long, sharp teeth. Seeing this gigantic demon, everyone in great fear ran here and there in all directions. That very fearful demon, who was actually the son of Tvashtha, covered all the planetary systems by dint of austerity. Therefore he was named Vritra, or one who covers everything. Purport. In the Vedas it is said, Sa imal lokan avrino tad vritrasya vritratvam. Because the demon covered all the planetary systems, his name was Vritrasura. Well, it's a purport, so I can speak on that. Vritrasura, his very name, means that he's a demon. Just like, well, the term asura, it's added, just like Bhishma is often called Bhishma Dev, means he's a godly person. His name is Bhishma, but he's called Bhishma Dev. So here, Vritra is, his name is Vritra, but just to emphasize the point, he's Vritrasura. So generally, if we call someone a demon, they may not be very pleased, but among the asuras, it seems they're quite happy to be known as asuras or demons. Just like Prahlad Maharaj called Hiranyakashipu Asura Varya. You're the best of the demons. So, the best of the worst, what does that mean? It means the worst. So, among the demons, to be most demoniac is considered a quality. So this Vritrasura appears to have been as horrifying, as fearful as Hiranyakashipu. It's stated here, but he covered all the planetary systems by dint of austerity. The austerity isn't described here. Described elsewhere in Shastra, there's description of Vritra. He's described in the Vedas. So he's a Vedic demon. So he covered all the worlds. His name was Vritra. It means that which covered all the planetary systems. So that means that he was certainly an extraordinary person. He did what was only done also by Vamanadev. We don't hear of other people covering all the world. So he was really extremely powerful. And with extreme power, one can either protect or one can destroy. And Vritrasura, because he was an asura, he was very fearful to everyone. His tendency was to destroy. Here he's described as, in this verse, which was, which I didn't read, it wasn't on the board. Papa paramadarunaha means he is personified sin, which, and very, very fearful. Of course, we know that Vritrasura, although he was born as an asura, he was specifically called forth for performing the main function of the asuras, which is Indrari Vyakulam. He's making Indra and the demigods afraid. The asuras are the enemies of the demigods. His own character, internally, he was a godly person. It's like Bali Maharaj. He was the king of the demons. So he did what the demons do. He attacked the demigods. Although his own nature was to be a devotee of Vishnu. So it's an unusual situation. When they're born in a situation where they are expected to, and to perform a function which is ungodly. They're expected to act in such a way that will bring fear to the world and will advance the cause of ungodly people. But their own personal tendency is to be godly. And it can work the other way also, that someone is in a godly situation. They're expected to be very pious, but they act in a way which is quite contradictory. Their own inclination is to be ungodly. That's more common in the modern age, in Kali Yuga. That, as Karl Marx noted, religion is the opiate of the people. The misuse of religion is almost expected, to the extent that many people claim that religion is the major cause of problems in the world. That Richard Dawkins and company, they claim that religion just causes so many problems, it's better not to have any religion. So, of course, that's a specious argument, because the misuse of something good doesn't render it bad. One has to find out the way to use it properly, just like the argument is going on that, well, atomic power can be used well. So it can be used badly or it can be used well. Of course, it's maybe a specious argument that it should be used at all, because even using it well has such bad side effects. But Vritrasura, as will be revealed here, he's godly by nature. He's so godly that he, in his previous life, he willingly agreed to become a demon. Can you imagine? He was cursed that now he was a devotee, but he was cursed to become a demon, and he willingly agreed. Jai and Vijay also, they're devotees. That means they have no interest but to serve Krishna, but they're cursed to become demons, and they accept. All right, whatever is the will of God. That's quite amazing, isn't it? If we were cursed that now you have to go and become fearful and nasty and cause distress to so many others, we wouldn't be inclined to do that. But these devotees, Jayan, Vijayan, now Chitra Ketu also, they agree. All right, it's the will of God. They are agreed to do that. So that question often comes, that why is there suffering in the world? How could anyone be of such a nature? How could anyone be so bad? How could anyone be a Hitler? How could anyone be so nasty? Well, in one sense, it shows how powerful is love of Krishna. Because when love of Krishna becomes perverted, then one becomes demoniac. So that love of Krishna, which is so strong, it becomes very powerful when it becomes perverted. So instead of Advishta Sarva Bhutanam Maitra Karuna Evacha, it becomes just the opposite. It becomes just a bad feeling towards everyone, toward all living beings, that to take pleasure in giving pain to others. Dvishta Sarva Bhutanam, and no friendship toward others, and no mercy. Of course, the demons, even among themselves, they have their own society, where they support each other. Just like with Bali Maharaj, they all supported him as the king of the demons, but to advance their own self-interest. They form a society and cooperate with each other to advance their own self-interest. Everyone is interested in themselves, basically. But in demoniac society, everyone is just interested in themselves. But they come together and cooperate with each other. But the idea is that by cooperation, it's a better policy for advancing my own self-interest. That's why we find that everyone's cooperating with each other. But then one gets an advantage, he exploits the others. Or he abandons the others. Some years ago I read that in England there were a couple of cases. One was an immigrant Pakistani family in which it's a joint family, so they do everything together. But when one of them won the lottery, like £1 million or something, he just abandoned the rest of the family. There's another case where either a boyfriend or a girlfriend had kept their tickets in with the other party. So when they won the lottery, £1 million or something like this, then they abandoned, I can't remember what it was, the boyfriend or the girl, they abandoned the other one and just took all the money. So we were friends and cooperating together nicely, but then when we won the money, well, it's my money, it's not yours. Which is foolishness, actually, because as the great philosophers of the modern age, Lennon and McCartney, famously said, money can't buy you love. So they got the money, but there's no enjoyment on your own. That's another point, just that by the very nature of living beings, we can't enjoy on our own. We need others to enjoy with. Even Arjuna said that what's the value in winning the battle? We'll win the battle, but we kill everyone. And then, where's the pleasure? Who are we going to win the battle? If everyone's dead, then how are we going to show off our wealth and share our good fortune with? If you have a big stack of gold and you're sitting on a desert island alone, what will you do with it? You can't share that with others, you can't show it off to anyone. So, even though one may become very powerful, or if you're, maybe a better example, you're on a desert island and you practice to the, doing exercises to the standard that you can become the world weightlifting champion, but who are you going to show that off to? So, the mistake of the demons. They're self-centered, just interested in themselves. Even though they may cooperate with each other, but they want to show off how much better they are than others. So the nature of a devotee is quite different. The demon covered this demon, Vritrasura, covered all the planetary systems, became so powerful that everyone took notice of him. That's one way of getting attention. A very effective way of getting attention. If one is fearful to others, or causes fear to others, then others will respect you, cringe from you. But a devotee is not interested in any such thing. We find that some of the... Gopal Bhatta Goswami, he gave his blessings to Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami for writing Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita on one condition: you don't write about me. He didn't want to be noted at all. Naturally a devotee becomes noted among devotees. Non-devotees, they can't understand what is the value of a devotee. This one book I made called Vanshidas Babaji. And I gave this to one businessman in Dubai. I gave him the copy. And if you've seen the picture of Vanshidas Babaji, he looks just about as different to a sophisticated businessman as anyone possibly could. I think those of you who are laughing, you've seen the picture, is it? I mean, he actually looks crazy. And he was crazy according to the standards of normal, respectable society. And he had nothing to do with normal, respectable society, nor even anything to do with any society. He just lived alone with Krishna. And he didn't really care very much about anyone else. He just lived with Krishna. So I gave this book with the picture of Vanshidas on to him, to this businessman. And he looked at it like aghast. As if to say, what are you giving me this book for? He said, who is he? And I said, well, he's a great devotee. And what did he do? Because this businessman, he has factories in different countries and so many businesses. And I said, he loved Krishna. And it didn't strike any chord with that businessman. Because, why are you writing a book? He couldn't understand why I wrote a book about someone who didn't do anything. I mean, you write biographies about Napoleon and every American president. After they boot him out, he writes his autobiography, usually assisted by a ghostwriter, because they're not, you know, it's not everyone's a great writer. But what did Vanshidas Babaji do? He didn't do anything to do with this world whatsoever. He just lived alone and worshipped Krishna. He was completely absorbed in love of Krishna. But materialistic people, they can't understand that. They think, well, you have to do something and show how great you are. But a devotee is just the opposite. Even if he does do something for Krishna, if he does anything in this world, it's for Krishna. Just like Prabhupada set up this whole International Society for Krishna Consciousness, for Krishna. Vritrasura covered the whole universe. Prabhupada also wanted to cover the whole universe with the holy name of Krishna. And he spread the holy name of Krishna all over the world. But he didn't spread his own, he didn't advertise himself. We find that this is a very good way that we can show others how Prabhupada was a pure devotee compared to so many others. Often people say, well, so-and-so Swami has so many followers, he's more famous, they have so many followers. And we point out, one way we can point out is that Prabhupada, he went all over the world, he made Krishna famous, not himself. Whereas everyone else, they put their own name, they put their own picture everywhere. Srila Prabhupada didn't do that. He made it clear that he's the founder, Acharya of ISKCON, because he knew Well, there may be various reasons for that, but the tendency there may be of others to usurp the position, which Srila Prabhupada didn't want that to be done, because he gave what we need. So he wanted it to be known that he is the founder Acharya, his books are the law books for the next 10,000 years. But he didn't promote himself. He didn't, like Vritrasura, there was no way that people could not know about him. So while Srila Prabhupada promoted the proper culture of respecting the Guru, he didn't promote himself. He promoted Krishna. He did something wonderful for Krishna. He would sometimes, in India, he would say, Giriraj Maharaj knows very well, he would speak to people and say, yes, we're selling so many lakhs worth of books every day, and we have so many centers all over the world, because he knew that people are impressed by such things. When he was building the Krishna Balaram temple in Vrindavan, someone came to him and said, well, why are you building this temple? You're a follower of the six Goswamis. They sat under a different tree every night. Then why are you going to build a big temple? It seems to be opposite to the example set by the six Goswamis. But Srila Prabhupada said that if I sit under a tree, no one will come to listen to me. If I build a temple, then you'll think I'm very important, and then you'll listen to what I have to say. So actually that temple, it was not built for Prabhupada's. He didn't need it for himself, but he wanted others to hear his message. So having big temples, that is required, just like we see there are big cathedrals throughout Europe. So that establishes in people's minds the importance of the Christianity. So big buildings, big organization in people's minds, because most people, they don't have any clear spiritual understanding. So if they see something materially very big, they're impressed by that. And of course the cathedral or the temple is supposed to be built very beautifully for the glorification of God. So that will impress others about the magnificence of God. We can see in South India there are so many big temples. Now the condition of them is not very good. They're run down, they need renovation. In Italy there are so many beautiful churches with beautiful artwork which speaks of the magnificence and the glory of God and of how people are inspired to glorify Him. So this helps to awaken people's inclination toward God. But that in building buildings in and of itself is not the essence of spiritual life. But it helps that people may become attracted to that. So the pure devotees, for the service of Krishna, they may build big temples, they may have a big worldwide organization, but personally for themselves, they're not interested to promote themselves. They're interested to promote Krishna. But on the other hand, it is the duty of those who are following the devotees to proclaim the glories of those devotees. As Narottam Das sings, and we sing every day in relationship to Srila Prabhupada, Ebe Josh Gushak Tribhuva. Now his glory should be proclaimed throughout the three worlds. Now we should glorify Srila Prabhupada very widely. But how will we do that? Who will appreciate? If we say, we can say that Srila Prabhupada opened so many temples, that he had so many followers. A number of followers is not large compared to many other people's followers. Of course, when we speak about followers of others, it's very easy for people to have followers if there's nothing much to follow. That's one reason why Srila Prabhupada didn't have many followers, because he made standards. that if you want to follow Srila Prabhupada, there are so many rules and regulations you have to follow. It's much easier just imagining yourself to be a follower with nothing in particular to follow. But Srila Prabhupada made standards, and he would quote this, Ekas Chandras Samohanti King Natara Ganopicha, that in the sky there are many stars, but only one moon. But one moon outshines all the stars. So Srila Prabhupada said, I don't mind if I don't have many followers, but let there be one moon-like follower. Now, of course, Srila Prabhupada, he did want many followers in one sense, that he vigorously preached Krishna consciousness all over the world. So you could say he did want followers. Not exactly followers. He wanted people to come to Krishna. And he took charge of them because he wanted them to come to, he wanted to train them to revive their Krishna consciousness. But for himself, he didn't want followers, but he did want to see people become pure devotees of Krishna. So one pure devotee of Krishna can give light to the whole world. Whereas little stars or little candles, they can only give very insufficient light. So for some time I was wondering why we have Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj's picture on the altar. What did he do? The same question you could say. What did he do? Alright, he loved Krishna. But what did he do? He didn't write many books like Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He didn't have a big movement with like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. But then the obvious point is that he had one disciple. And who was that one disciple? That you all know, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. And it wasn't just a formality that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he took initiation from Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj. He says that, he himself said that his whole understanding was revolutionized. It was like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He was a great personality, but the switch was turned by Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the switch to activate his Madhuryojvala Premardhyasi Rupanoga Bhakti, his qualities of being absorbed in pure devotional service and giving that to others, that was activated by Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, who Saraswati Thakur said, before I met him, I was proud of being a great debater and very moral and very respected in society. But when I saw Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, when I saw he didn't care for any of these things, then I thought, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that, then I considered that what he has got must be so much more valuable than all these things that I esteem so, and everyone else esteems so highly. He's got something which is far beyond anything I've got. And another, which is of course pure devotional service to Krishna without any concern for anything else in the world. Then another point, he stated, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, that he stated that before he saw Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, he thought that the standard of pure devotional service which is described in Shastra, it's not possible to attain in this world. It's just something, it's theoretical. But when he saw Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, then when he associated with him, then he understood this. So a devotee is great. A devotee is much greater than Vitrasura. Of course, Vitrasura is great because he's actually a pure devotee. But a devotee doesn't promote himself, but every devotee, it may be some unknown person, it just maybe housewife, looking after her children, going to the temple every day. Maybe such a great person, much more important than any Hitler or Stalin or Obama or Osama or any of these. They're actually much more important because they love Krishna and Krishna loves them. We don't know who's actually, who are great devotees. We see some people, they sit on big seats, they give big lectures and people say jai to them. But there may be others who are just, they're not noticed, but they love Krishna. So that's what Prabhupada came for, to give us all love of Krishna. He gave us Srimad Bhagavatam, by which we can hear about those who love Krishna. We can come every, simply coming every day here. I see there, I mean, I've only been in and out of here a few days. I see there some devotees coming every day. And you may think, well, it's like a routine. But Krishna noticed that. And Krishna notices some devotees are there every morning, Mangal Arati, coming to the classes, doing service all day. You may think, well, it's just a routine. They're just passing their life. But Krishna sees. Krishna sees those who are enthusiastic to come every day, get up, attend the programs. Krishna sees that. So, what is the purport of this rambling discourse? The purport is, let's all be Krishna conscious. And I'm over time. Srivasa Prabhu didn't shoot me yet. Looks quite happy. He always looks happy. So, should I take a question or two? Yes, please.
Mark, thank you for your enlightenment and request. About that last point on the source of
discovery.
Obviously, you have an example of the body.
Yeah, I knew someone was going to ask that. It's a very touchy point.
Did he not appreciate because of proximity?
Did he not appreciate Bhaktivinoda's proximity?
Because of proximity? Or?
It's a very touchy point. Bhaktivinoda was in many ways, well, there were two gurus practically. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had Bhaktivinoda and Gaurakishore. But maybe from the external point of view we could say in some ways it could be a case of, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was very much the renunciant. And he took everything. He didn't see Bhaktivinoda Thakur as his father. He saw him as his guru. He learned everything from him. But he himself was, his ideal was the renunciant. I won't say more. I don't want to stretch the point or speculate too much, but I think you can understand from that. Yeah. Yeah, I'll just take the question.
Maharaj, thank you very much. In speaking about demons and demonic mentality, we often see the biggest display of demonic mentality by devotees of Krishna.
The biggest display of demonic mentality is by devotees. Yeah, that example, Jai Vijay, Chitraketu. Yeah, well, they've got a very strong, I said that in the class, right, that the demoniac mood is a perversion of love of Krishna. So those who have intense love of, those who are intense, when that becomes switched around the other way, it can become very intense in the other way also.
So in reality, most of the rest of the living beings who have some degrees of demonic mentality, that means us also, including us, we all have some degree of demonic mentality. Actually, in one sense, who is the biggest demon when it comes to biggest demon?
Who's the biggest demon? Well, everyone should think I'm the biggest demon, isn't it? If you're a devotee. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Asura Shakal Pailo Charam Binoda Takelo Boshi. All the demons have attained to your lotus feet, Gopinath, but I'm still sitting here. I still didn't get it. So who's the biggest demon? A devotee. We find that all the pure devotees, it's inconceivable. They think of themselves as the worst. Amita Dosha Era Doshi. Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings in this song, same song. I'm the worst of the worst. A pure devotee doesn't see any demons. He sees everyone as a pure devotee. So who's the worst devotee? Instead of, I mean, we find the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, the search for the best devotee, but we don't find anywhere the search for the worst demon. How will that benefit us? If we will simply become absorbed ourselves in demoniac propensities. I mean, in one sense, we should see the demons as unfortunate, especially in the modern age. I mean, there's no demon who's anywhere near as fearful as Vritrasura or Hiranyakashipu. However hard they try, they can't become as powerful. So, in the present age, they can be rectified by Harinam. I mean, most of us sitting here, we all come from backgrounds of very sinful life, isn't it? So, we don't... Demons, yes, the demons are there. Mostly we find that Srila Prabhupada, he was, and all the Vaishnava Acharyas, they're very much opposed to Mayavad. They didn't like that. Because that denies Krishna. In one sense, the Mayavadis, Srila Prabhupada said, they're worse than atheists. Because in one sense, the atheists, although they technically means they don't believe in God, but we see practically they do believe in Him, but they hate Him. And why should they be so much concerned? There's no God, there's no God, there's no God. They're always thinking about God. By denying His existence, they're opposed to, but Mayavadis, they just try to ignore Him altogether. Or to completely trivialize His opulences and say, well, we're all God. So, the Mayavadis are the most despicable. Yeah. Hare Krishna. If there's any wonder, it's all because of that we for class forces us at least to say something about Krishna.
Right. You did mention a lot about demons.
Yeah, well, that's the subject, isn't it, of the present verse?
Something about Christianity and how these Christians they have all these wonderful churches in the invocation of the Lord. Just like I was in Italy just now.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's like one big art museum, isn't it?
Huge cathedral.
But even in the small towns and villages, they're beautiful churches.
The church is the center of town.
It's really something very special.
You know, and in terms of Krishna consciousness and what we believe, a lot of the people that came there are actually demoniac, in terms of their habits.
Even the people who built the churches, actually, I mean, they didn't have a... I mean, all of Europe at one point was intensely theistic. Those crusades, it wasn't a conscript army. They went marching off because they had this strong feeling, we have to liberate the Holy Land. So it was a very strong feeling, a very deep conviction, but no proper spiritual knowledge. So animal killing, intoxication, that was all there.
Well, what was interesting was that during that time, period, the Lord Chaitanya was present.
Yeah.
Because I believe that most of these cathedrals, 14th and 15th century, but since that particular time, they haven't been able to really match that particular
that mood and feeling. Well, this right after that came the Enlightenment, so-called. I mean, what they call the Enlightenment is the Endarkenment. They just went from one phase of darkness to another, actually, in terms of actual knowledge. So, what's called science, if we're talking about demons, this idea that we can control nature by our own endeavors, we can manipulate nature to make it better, and there's no God. That's been very prominent in Western culture, so that people, they don't have any feeling for God.
But why do we see thousands of people? We went there
In Italy, they're mostly in their tourists coming to see the sightseeing, isn't it?
Well, I was sightseeing. So.
Yeah.
But, I mean, still, there was a presence of awe and reverence.
Reverence, yeah. Certainly, those cathedrals inspire awe and reverence, which is the approach to God in Christianity, whereas in... And the big temples in South India, they also inspire that. Whereas the Gaudiyas traditionally don't build big temples. They keep it small because it's more intimate.
Well, where do they stand in terms of the demons?
Where do they stand? It's like a mixture. Well, in Kali Yuga, the Tamaguna is very prominent. So that, as you've asked me, I'll give some reply. So that even when people, they come to God consciousness, they tend to come in a way which is mixed with tamaguna. And in tamaguna, it's predominated by ignorance. There's no actual knowledge, and by violence toward others. That's what tamaguna. We see one aspect of tamaguna is dullness, in which there's no activity, no motivation. Intoxication, sleep. And another aspect of tamaguna is needless violence, with for no purpose whatsoever, causing pain and harm to others. So that has been prominent in the this very word religion. The very connotation of the word religion it's an English word which is coined in Christian terms, but the whole ethos in the non-Abrahamic religions was completely different. So to say, if we say this is a religion, it puts us in a box where we don't really belong. It's a mental construct formed according to ideas which don't really properly represent what Krishna consciousness and the Varnashram culture is. But anyway, having said that, for want of a better term, the Hinduism, Buddhism, Jainism, that culture of violence with the idea that you have to kill or torture or persecute others if they don't believe in the same religion, that wasn't there. I mean, Srila Prabhupada himself, he often said that Christianity, although in the Bible it said, thou shalt not kill, but the whole history is one of killing. I read a book a few years ago, is a history of Christianity. I was interested to read what the different philosophical issues were. It was nothing about philosophical issues, it was just how they were killing each other, Christians killing each other, different sects killing each other, and killing non-Christians. So it was not very inspiring, actually. So, yeah. Anyway, Srila Prabhupada also, he wasn't into Christian bashing. We need not fall into the same the same mistake as they do, but rather if we can glorify Krishna and show the people who are actually interested in God consciousness, who are sincere to know God, then if they can hear about Krishna and become attracted to the beauty of Krishna, the joyfulness of Krishna consciousness, and understand, as Srila Prabhupada said, that people go from India to America to learn higher education, like in science, so that knowledge, it's not American knowledge or Indian knowledge, but if it's presented in a more complete way in one place, then why, if you're interested in science, then you take advantage of wherever it's being taught in the best possible way. So in the same way, if you're actually interested in God, then if you see here that there's more knowledge, more understanding who He is, how to approach Him, understanding our relationship with Him, that Krishna consciousness is the developed understanding of God. So why not take it? Yeah.
Well, another question about the demon. There's one devotee, his name is Asura Kulanashanam.
Mm-hmm.
So when he was initiated, Prabhupada looked at him and said, "Do you know where the demons are?" And he said, "No, in my life." And Prabhupada said, "No, the scientists."
Mm-hmm. Kill all the scientists with their families. Whoops, I just said it from the Vyasa sign. Maybe my disciples will take that as an order. Well, in Kali Yuga, the killing is by killing the mentality, isn't it? Yeah. But one thing, with all due respect to Drutakama Prabhu, is not his mission. It's the mission of the whole International Society for Krishna Consciousness, isn't it? The fact that he's taken it up very seriously is glorious for him, but actually we should all be doing this. I mean, of course everyone has different services, but Srila Prabhupada so much wanted this. He was prepared to give any amount of resources to the Bhaktivedanta Institute because he knew that science, or what's called science, it shapes the whole mentality, the whole worldview of people in the modern world. So he wanted to, although Prabhupada wasn't against science per se, but he wanted to show the defects of the present misuse of it and the present misunderstanding of it. So really, it's a major part of our mission. It's so easy for us just to become a religion, which is, then we can fit into a little box which everyone can understand what it is. Okay, it's a little religion. Okay, be a little religion. You do your thing. But Srila Prabhupada wanted to change the whole human society in its attitudes, way of life, culture, everything. And the modern civilization is based on the wrong premise that life is a product of matter. And all the other fallacies that go along with that. So Srila Prabhupada, seeing that, he wanted to chop this modern civilization and its the materialistic civilization at its root. So really it's the mission of the whole society.
That's what will come up with. Well, I think of Father. He was so extraordinary. I mean, multi-faceted ability, but there's one very aspect about Prabhupada that is mind boggling me. His political genius in the context.
He was what?
He's like a political genius when he came here. Okay. When he came here, he said one word. Let me give you an example. When he came here, there was a challenge to the whole status quo of the most powerful materialistic country in the world. Like, for example, Luther King said, like the Panthers and the other ones in that period in the 60s. If they were taken seriously, then their records would have been self-imposed genocide, challenging the most powerful materialistic entity on the planet. And the whole intent of the American Constitution was to protect private business capital. And the development of Western capitalism. I'm a Stanford educated political economist. And he's a genius, political genius. He's doing from a secular, this from a secular context. He came here and he embraced the hippie movement that was challenging at this time the materialism of his conscience at that time. And Christian consciousness is to get away from the material.
You know, there's an old saying, one of the best things that reflects a person's wisdom is when not to say anything. And the history movement was challenging the materialism of this country. From a proud political genius said, one line, no more interest. He didn't go on another explanation or whatever. Because then there would have been an ultimate challenge of this system to destroy the movement.
Jai Prabhupada! Hare Krishna! All glories to Srila Prabhupada.